And we are back with another episode of The Most High Show. My name is Christian. With me today is a good friend of mine, Adam. We got Jeff on the ones and twos. We're going to be talking about using virtual reality to help heroin addicts kick heroin. Don't know how that works. We're going to watch a clip on that. And then Adam and I are going to chop it up on the thought of the day, which is the fruit of walking with God versus not walking with God. That's right. We used the G word. That's going to happen today on The Most High Show. Check it out.
Welcome to The Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is The Most High Show.
All right, so this week on the Recovery Rundown segment, we're going to play a clip from James and Melinda talking about how some university is using virtual reality to help addicts kick heroin or deal. There's some stuff going on. And guess who else is in the clip? My man, Dr. Phil in the building. Check it out.
Speaking of alternatives to traditional treatment methods, researchers at the University of Houston are using virtual reality technology to help with many medical conditions, including substance abuse disorder. Proponents of virtual reality therapy believe it may help people manage the pain associated with withdrawal from addictive substances, including opioids.
Hey, come on in. I'm Marcia. What's your name?
Tucked away in a small room at the University of Houston is a cave.
Is that here?
Inside this cave, researchers are using virtual reality to help addicts kick their heroin addiction.
I believe that it is the first in the nation around to be able to investigate the use of this technology around heroin and opiates.
Mickey Washburn oversees day-to-day operations of the lab.
This is very cutting edge.
Addicts strap on a virtual reality headset and navigate through a house party scenario. Details like an open pizza box to a spoon and syringe on a table are meant to enhance sensations and trigger a heroin craving.
In this controlled environment, we're teaching them coping skills.
This virtual reality would not replace traditional therapy.
If we can have multiple tools to help people who are trying to combat their addiction, we're giving them a better chance of success.
Even Dr. Phil is getting in on the virtual reality treatment action. On his show, he recently demonstrated his virtual reality tool to help addicts bridge the gap when transitioning from rehab to the real world.
Put this on, and we've got this wired to the screens. You're going to see on the screens what Eric is seeing in the goggles. Now, this is pre-recorded. Okay, Eric, look up. Now look to your left. This is what he's seeing. Now, what I've done here is I've put them in a bar situation. So while they're in rehab, they're sitting talking to me in a bar. Now they're sitting, and this is actually in my backyard. So I can talk to them in a relaxed setting where they can hear and remember some coping strategies in a 3D virtual reality situation.
All right, so virtual reality for being used to help addicts recover. I can already hear like some old timer freaking out about that. So Adam's here with me, and in addition to talking about the thought of the day, we're going to talk about this recovery rundown. So you saw the clip. What was your first kind of impression, first initial thoughts when you saw it?
Honestly, I think it's a great idea.
Why?
So at my work, I'm a counselor, and I'm a counselor for the transition phase. These guys have gone through 9 months of this program. In the last 3 months, they're able to start. They live there. They get full-time jobs. They go to outside meetings. They have their cars, their phones, and they're experiencing, you know, life outside of this safety bubble that was this program,
right,
for the first time. And so I'm supporting these guys that are experiencing these triggers for the first time. And it's one thing, I think, to imagine what it'll be like, you know, in early recovery, experiencing that and maintaining sobriety. And then it's a whole other thing when you actually encounter it. And I think it's a really safe way to experience that and kind of assess how you do with it, or what are your reflexes, what are your reactions, to kind of, you know, find a baseline for yourself, like, okay, this is where I'm actually at.
Well, I know when I got out of rehab, the first year of my recovery at least, I couldn't watch. It would give me a major trigger if I watched like someone doing coke like on a movie or something like that. Like I'd be like, I would get bubble guts, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so I just was like, well, I can't watch that. But I also just made it a point to, my first year was very much structured around, you know, work, meetings, and family, right? And church.
Right, yeah.
That was pretty much the only things I did.
Foundational stuff.
But there was that moment driving home on Friday nights, which was my, that was when I was finna turn it up, right? And so I remember those, that 30 minute, 45 minute, depending on traffic, hour was, could be a very stressful time, because I was like, ooh, I could feel it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you think, so you think by them being exposed, like in that video that they showed, like they're like walking through a house party and they like see, you see a needle and there was some old creepy dude, Uncle Grandpa shooting heroin in the corner. That was kind of crazy. If you're listening to the show, if you watch the show, you'll be able to see the clip. In the clip, they show how this virtual reality looks. And so these people are walking through a party and they're seeing all these triggers, right? Like the needle and the spoon and the somebody's getting high.
In the bar.
And the bar. With the Uncle Phil, and so you think exposing them when they're in a safe?
I pictured Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince of Bel Air, Dr. Phil, people.
Dr. Uncle Phil, Uncle Dr. Phil.
Well,
yeah. So you think when they're, if they're like in a safe environment to be exposed to those triggers, that will, what do you think it does? Desensitize them to it, or prepares them to deal with it? Or?
I mean, I think it's like exposure therapy.
Uh huh.
But in a very, I don't know, I think like my understanding of exposure therapy, it's exposing you to the actual substance.
Ooh.
Like having it present. I could be wrong about that.
Okay.
I might be.
Okay.
I don't think I am, but I might be. Where this is, you know, virtual.
Yeah.
But it looks real. Yeah. I'm sure the response and the feeling that it elicits is real.
Yeah.
I know that.
Right.
Just like you said, seeing it in a movie.
Yeah.
Brought about the sensation that you experience. And
yeah. Yeah. Well, I had those experiences. I still can't walk near by a glass table or glass desk and not, my brain automatically thinks about chopping cocaine up on it. I'm not saying I want to or I have a craving. But my brain just goes, oh, that's what we do with that table.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why a glass table would exist, right?
Yeah.
I did do a thing called neurofeedback. Have you heard of that?
Uh-huh.
So I was about 5-6 years in recovery. I was going through really bad depression, suicidality. It was rough. And so I went to see an addictionologist, and she did this neurofeedback. And so what you do is you sit down, they do a brain scan, right? And then they kind of calibrate the machine, and you sit down and you watch a nature show, right? And when your brain starts going into whatever the wave is, the negative wave, right? Because they're measuring the brain activity.
Mm-hmm.
What the screen does is it dims, right? So your mind, because you're watching something, your brain is already going, okay, that doesn't look right. It's dim and it should be brighter. So it starts to train your brain to, you're like adjusting the screen. It's a really weird, like what they're doing is you're rewiring your brain based on how your brain waves are kind of like reacting. So you give a look on your face like, what the heck?
I'm curious to hear how this ends.
Well, so I, you know, so it's of course, this is the next segment of this piece, right? Is wasn't covered by insurance. Maybe more addictionologists are being covered by insurance now, but that was 5 years ago, and they definitely were not in network. That kind of treatment wasn't. So I had to. They recommended like 25 treatments, and I only did I think 10 or 12 because it's all I could afford. And I would notice when I did the neurofeedback the next day, I would experience immediate like benefits and results. Like I would feel more motivated, lighter, less depressed, right? A little freer. But then the day after, I would kind of crash. Huh. And they told me that that's natural, that's normal, because your brain is starting to adjust, right? So that's why they recommend the extended kind of.
That makes sense. Just like braces for your teeth.
Right. Right.
Take each time they adjust it, it hurts, and then it feels
right
better after a while. And
yeah.
Your teeth are moved a little bit and a little bit.
Right. So I could imagine if you were doing that virtual reality thing that you could, if you were kind of had these brain nodes on you that could measure your brain response and then measure your heart rate and all those other things to tell like what kind of response you were having and how that could kind of help to tell somebody where they're at biologically if they're ready, you know?
Yeah. I mean, overall, I think it's a great idea because like, I'll get guys that come that get to my phase of the program and they have this expectation, and I did too, you know, of where I'm at and how secure I am in my recovery. And yeah. And I'll start to like kind of talk about some things they're most likely going to experience. And they're like, oh, you know, like I'm good, man. I got 9 months of recovery. I'm like, dude, no, you don't. You got 9 months of treatment.
Right.
Like, you've been in this bubble, man. Right. You don't realize it because you've been in this bubble, and you're not going to realize it until you leave the bubble and you start experiencing these, you know, negative encounters, whatever that looks like. Maybe it's not getting the job you want, or it's getting rejected by somebody, or, you know, somebody cuts you off in traffic, or all these things you just haven't had to deal with in a long time. Yeah. Now you're having to deal with them, and now you're having to deal with them sober.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of variables in there that I think, I know for me, were not expected.
Yeah.
And I think people could probably tell me until they were blue in the face, and I'll just be like, no, I'm good, I'm good, right. I'm good, until I was like, oh,
right,
crap, that's what they meant.
Well,
that's stubborn like that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like, it's one thing to see like cocaine in a movie nowadays and not be bothered by it. It's another thing to be in the room with cocaine.
Yeah.
And that's never, I've never put myself in that position.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, to speak about my powerlessness, specifically to that drug, I mean, I got a half a second to get up out of there. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like, you could do the virtual reality, but it's like the first time, you remember the first time you smelled a beer because somebody, you were in a house or someone was drinking a beer and you hadn't smelled, if you were in treatment for that long, you hadn't smelled a beer. Boy, that's a trigger right there, right? Like if it's the first time.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, I remember that too. Like I just, I did not enjoy being around it.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't even think it was like for some, I mean, alcohol wasn't really my thing.
Yeah.
But still, I just didn't like being around people that I feel like aren't with it 100%.
Uh-huh.
It just made me uncomfortable.
Right.
You know? And I wasn't, I don't know, I feel like that
virtual. You were like a sober snob?
No, I mean, I wasn't judging them. You know what I mean? Because it's family was really my first experience with that.
And yeah.
I wasn't judging them because they, you know, none of them suffer from the same illness that I do.
Right.
And so it's fine for them. I just didn't like being around people that I feel like when I'm talking to, they're not going to remember, or they're just very surface level. And I just didn't enjoy being around it.
Yeah.
You know, and I still don't. And so I just don't, for the most part, put myself in those scenarios. Yeah, in those
situations. Right. You know? So I think we've enhanced the program. So when you do the virtual reality treatment, you got to add some smells, right? I think that'll help.
Like a mister, like on some of those rides where they miss you with dinosaur breath or something.
Right. Heroin breath. I don't know what heroin breath smells like.
You got people asking you to borrow $5 or something.
Yeah, they should like.
I got you back, man. Come right. Back. I'm getting paid Friday.
That's what they should replicate is like the sleeping in your car, you know, begging for change. That's what they should replicate to be reminded of. Oh, yeah, that's where I was 9 months ago. You know,
they just have people driving places with their light on E in their car.
Yeah.
Will you make it? Will you not? Will come you back next week and find out.
Right. And then they should have like where you pull up to the dope man spot and he's not there and you got to wait like 4 hours for him to come back.
The neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah. You just got to sit in this virtual environment for like 4 hours waiting for the dope man. I think at some point you'd be like, okay, I'm good. I'm committed to sobriety.
They'll give you a virtual reality phone that says I'm on the way. I'm 5 minutes. Man, you said that 2 hours ago.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's good. So that's our take on virtual reality treatment. So, you know, who knows? If it can be accessible, that's the thing, right? Some of these treatments they're like neurofeedback. And like seeing an addictionologist, it's not accessible to a lot of people, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, c'est la vie. This is how it is, you know? Living in America, baby. That's how it goes.
I don't know, man. Hopefully with, like, all this attention on, like, the opioid crisis and all that, maybe some things start to get covered under insurance, so it's, like, accessible, at least for the people that have insurance.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. All right, so before we start getting political and Adam breaks out his Trump hat, we're going to...
I'm the least political guy you'll
ever. I know. You and me both, so I'm just joking. We're going to go to a commercial break, then we're going to come back with this thought of the day, and we're going to drop the G word a lot, so hopefully you're going to be into that kind of stuff.
Look out.
Why Most High Media? Because I don't have the answers. Other people do. And learning from the experiences, the stories, the perspectives, seeing people who have been through the darkest of circumstances and then have come out of it on the other side and have lived extremely exciting, fulfilling lives and tapped into a way of being and a way of living, but it's actually real and obtainable, that's why.
We packed up to tell the story of a young lady who lost her daughter.
So there's a extremely high correlation between suicide, mental illness, and substance abuse.
I'm on the ground. I'm on the ground. Sir.
I think as of this year, there's about 14 million people in America who have a co-occurring disorder, and a little more than 7% of them seek help for it.
You know, in my addiction, I felt like I was better off dead.
I'm here to talk about my daughter, Megan, who committed suicide when she was 28.
There's enough hope in the people that do recover to where I keep going and keep showing up at places where I'm needed.
If you need some things like love and change, I'm not talking coins and things or diamond rings. Everybody wants some change, but don't nobody wanna do nothing till the pain they can't stomach. And they told me that I believed them, so I gave them to the everybody thought that I was tripping, saying that I'm be acting different.
Ain't no high like the most high. Ain't no high like the most high. Ain't no high like the most high. Ain't no high.
Ain't no high like the most high.
All right. From virtual reality to ultimate reality.
You
like
nice.
That segue?
I do like that.
I just made that up. This was... Adam and I have done these kind of thought of the day topics before, and I asked him, what do you think we could talk about? And he threw out this topic. So if it doesn't go well,
it's my fault.
It's Adam's
100%.
Fault. The fruit of walking with God versus not walking with God. So, and you, before the show, we were talking about it, and you asked me, what did I think about the topic?
Yeah.
And I said it sounded very Christianese, right? Fruit and walking, right?
That's true.
And God.
It's you missed the part where I went, ah.
Right. but then when I thought about it, I thought about what that word, like the term like fruit, right? It's evidence. Mm-hmm. The evidence of walking with God versus evidence of not. And then I thought about, well, walking is really, you know, living in accordance to, right?
Sure.
That's kind of how I was taking it. I thought about that. And I thought, man, that gives us some really good things to break down. So, but before we break down evidence and experience, let's talk about what or who, you know, with this God thing, this G word. A lot of people get jacked up about that. And I just want
to. I did.
Yeah. So tell me about your experience when you first were introduced to that G word.
Man, I was repelled, you know? I grew up Catholic, and like all the people that I knew went to church were, you know, one way on Sundays. Every Sunday, you know, I made it to church. I kind of checking a box. And then they're cussing at people that are going too slow in the parking lot.
Right.
You know, or being one way in there and a completely different way the rest of the week. And so I'm like, what's the point? Is it, it's just a show?
Yeah.
To tell others, I go to church. Like, cool.
Like, you made this determination like really early, or like how old were you when you kind of connected those two?
I'd say I was pretty young, man. I was in elementary school.
Okay.
I think I just learned how to be fake and how to judge people in church as a kid.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I understood it that way then, but like looking through it through an adult filter now.
Yeah.
I think that was my takeaway as a kid.
Yeah. So now when we're talking about this G word.
Yeah.
It gets reintroduced to you. Is it some point in recovery, or it's before recovery, or after getting sober?
I would say it was the doorway between addiction and recovery for me. And I mean, I think walking with God, the G word,
yeah,
is very similar to a lifestyle of recovery, where walking with not is very similar to my lifestyle and addiction.
Yeah.
I think they're very paralleled.
Right.
And so that's why I thought it would be appropriate for the show.
Yeah.
You know?
No, absolutely. So this was the doorway. It's a great analogy. Or metaphor. I'm not sure which one.
I don't know.
But you're saying that. So how did that get introduced? Like, did somebody say, you know, you got to accept God or you're going to die? Or
no, it was very, it was more for me, it was more of a curiosity from people that were further along in recovery, that were counselors at the program that I went to. Uh-huh. Who had also been in the program that I was currently in. Mm-hmm. And I see the way they carry themselves, and I see the way they react or respond to different scenarios.
Yeah.
And they're just calm, collected. They have poise. They're just graceful, really loving and like genuine, vulnerable. And I'm like, how do you do that?
Right.
Like, I don't know exactly. I can't put my finger on exactly what you have, but I know that I want it.
Yeah.
How did you get it?
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, surrender is the word. It's like, okay, that sounds like losing, and I'm a man, and I'm strong.
Right.
Yeah, I'm in a year-long treatment center, and my life is absolute shit, but I'm strong.
Right.
And it sounds like quitting. It's like, okay, so surrendering what, or surrendering to whom? Is it whom or who?
Yeah. To whom? Yeah. Surrender supposes that there's something you're surrendering to. And then they would say, God.
Surrendering flesh. There's that Christianese.
Yeah.
Surrendering selfish desires.
Yeah.
To God and God's will.
Yeah.
What God would have us do.
Yeah. So you saw people exhibiting characteristics and behaviors in their life, and they attributed this life style to having surrendered to God.
Yeah.
And so then you were like, okay, well, if they're living authentic and they were in this treatment, then maybe I can surrender to, maybe this God thing isn't just Sunday morning checking the box.
Yeah.
Honking it.
And you know what's weird is like when I first started seeing these guys and hearing those answers, I'm like, you're full of shit.
Yeah.
It's like, that sounds good. Like, dude, where's the cameras?
Right.
Like, okay, you're doing this for like this show or image. Right. And that's what I thought at first. I was super judgy of these guys and thought they were just saying it because it sounded good. And through repeated exposure to them and the way they carry themselves and all that stuff, and that being their answer, I was like, all right, maybe they're telling the truth.
Mm. Yeah. I know, like, the God thing for me, I feel like I always believed in a God. I can remember being a little kid and just having this intrinsic kind of knowing. But the way I saw God was this far-off observer.
Yeah.
Watching me. Not necessarily judging or upset.
Very much like Santa, right?
A little bit like Santa, but not so much about... He wasn't even going to give me anything if I was good.
Yeah.
Like, he just was watching. He didn't really care what happened in my life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I can remember as a kid walking to school and in my head, right? This is before I did drugs, right? So you know I'm a trip. In my head, I'm imagining God watching me from the top down, right? And seeing the top of my head as I walk to school.
Mm.
And so I was kind of, the God thing was always, yeah, I get it. You know, I never had any problem with it. Where the problem started coming was that this God was, number one, interested in me, interconnected into the reality that I exist, doing things for me and through me, right? That was like harder to, I feel like that I'm still digesting.
Yeah. To this I think day. We'll always be digesting
that. Yeah. Yeah. The moment you're like, yeah, no, I'm good. I got it. That's probably not. Yeah. <God.
laughs> I tell guys that all the time.
Yeah.
Not in a spiritual thing, but as far as recovery.
Yeah.
Falling feels like flying kind of thing until you hit the ground, you know?
Falling feels like flying until you hit the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's this thing, right? And like in the 12-step program, they were wise to use the term higher power. They also use God. And God is kind of the general term for this higher authority.
Yeah.
This thing that's above, a new set of directions, this thing that's above us, right? So that's what we mean when we're talking about God. And your understanding of that, it will vary as you grow and live.
Yeah. Right?
Because when you're a hopeless drug addict and you're praying for God to remove the addiction and it doesn't happen, you immediately think, well, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
God's not real. This is all fake.
Yeah.
Right? Because God doesn't bend to your will. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're kind of talking about when we're talking about God. And then let's get to the kind of meat of this, which is, you know, the fruit, the evidence of. And I heard recently somewhere someone said, ever since I've surrendered my will to God, he's never instructed me to go buy crack. He's never told me to go to the liquor store and get a 40.
Yeah.
He's told me to serve, to love, to be kind, to, you know, be silent, you know, but he's never said, go do these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? You've earned it. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, that's usually not.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So this fruit of...
I mean, he usually tells me to do pretty much the exact opposite of what I want to do.
Yeah.
When I hear it very clearly. And that's how I know it's him. Because it's the opposite of what I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the beginning of your recovery and you're starting this like surrendering, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's a little bit, you know, what's that like? What was that in practicality? How did that begin to come about, manifest in your life?
I mean, the very first time letting that happen, allowing that. Was getting kicked out of this program the second time. I had planned to go back to my home city of Jacksonville, and my counselor, who is the guy one of the guys I referenced earlier, that had this thing that I wanted, encouraged me. When he asked me what I was going to do, I said, well, I'm going to go back home. And he's like, well, have you prayed about it? I was like, no. I just found out. He's like, well, take some time and, you know, ask God what he wants you to do. And I was like, you know what? My life is absolute shit. I've gotten kicked out of this program twice now. And going back home to what? I don't know, because I burned, you know, everything to the ground. So there's a lot up in the air right now. I was like, you know what? What do I have to lose? It was that like moment of desperation.
Yeah.
To do something different and get something different. And so I did. I said, you know, God, do you want me to go to Jacksonville? And I didn't hear anything. And I got really frustrated because I had kind of connected with God through like some journaling and stuff up to this point. And so I asked, do you want me to stay? Because I didn't hear anything from the first question. So I was like, well, maybe I'll ask a different question.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked, do you want me to stay? And I heard, grow where you're planted.
Hmm.
And I was like, shit, that's the opposite of what I want to do.
Right.
And, you know, I kind of wrestled with that. And I wrestled with the idea, knowing my counselor was going to ask me what I heard. I wrestled with the idea of lying to him and saying, no, yeah, God told me to do whatever I want.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? Like, I'm tired of that shit. I'm tired of living like that. And I was like talking out loud, and I never did that really with God. And I still rarely do that, but was talking out loud to him. And I was like, look, man, I don't trust you. I was like, I'm not going to sit here and say I do, because I know that you know I don't.
Right.
So I'm not going to like bullshit you. Like, I'll be real with you. I was like, I don't trust you.
Mm-hmm.
But historically, I cannot trust myself. And I said, you know what? The reason why I don't trust you is because I've never given you any trust. I've never put you into my decision making.
Yeah.
And chose to do what you would have me do.
Right. That's a big
I only
key.
Did it
right.
if it co-signed to what I already right. wanted to do.
Yeah.
And most of the time, I think I just deceived myself into thinking it was God telling me that so I could do what I wanted to do.
Right. Yeah.
And so I told him, I was like, you know what, man? I'm going to give you a shot. I really want to trust you. I really want to believe that you're going to do these things, these promises that all these guys were talking about. That you're going to, you know, lead a path for me to walk down, and you're going to support me, and, you know, and I'm going to feel cared for. Like, I really, really want that. And I think for me to get it, I'm going to actually have to give you some trust. And so, like, I'm going to do that, and I hope that you come through.
Yeah.
And I did, and decided to stay here, and I didn't know what that looked like. I didn't have a car, phone, job, money. I didn't know anybody here.
Yeah.
And I had a friend that was in the program with me, hooked me up with Vision Warriors, a local sober living. They kind of removed some barriers to get me in the same day with no money up front. And boom, all of a sudden I have safe, healthy housing with healthy people around me and community.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh.
Yeah.
All right. That worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, instances of that in the last 5 years of hearing something, being like, oh, that sounds scary. I don't think that's going to work out. And being like, you know what? The last time I did what you told me to do, it worked out really well. And I didn't see how that was going to work out either.
Yeah.
So I'm going to trust you.
Yeah. That's there's an old saying called those who believe obey. And it's a two-part saying, those who believe obey, those who obey believe.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't have either statement without the other. And what you're talking about is you believed, but the thing that makes the belief real is the obedience.
Yeah.
Because
action.
Action. Grow where you're planted. Okay. You know, and the way my defense mechanism is to that is, what's that mean, grow where you're planted? What's that mean? So do I need to go get planted over here so I can grow there? Or what do you mean by grow where I'm planted? Do you mean right here?
Am I planted now? Does that mean you want me to go plant where I want to be at?
Right, yeah. I would like try to like, you know.
I took that as the community and people I had met here.
Right. You knew what it meant. But you,
I did.
But you took, but you obeyed it, and that's where it became a fruit, evidence.
Yeah.
Right. Because just, it's kind of like, you know, if someone comes up to you and goes, God told me, it's like, that's the first sign you should probably not listen to whatever they're about to say. You know, because rarely does God do that. But because you had the evidence of being in obedience created the evidence of, oh, I did hear that. You know,
like, yeah.
I did hear growth. And here you are today, right? This is what, 5-6 years ago?
5 and some change.
Right. So here you are today, still sober, still free, living an epic life. Now you're giving back and doing things. So it's like there's the evidence of that obedience.
Yeah.
Right. But you don't really know it's true until you put it to test.
And you know what's crazy too is like, as much time, I mean, as I spent in Catholic church and getting confirmed, you know, at Catholic school,
mm-hmm.
all that stuff, like even going to church every week. I used to serve at a church in Jacksonville, and I would get stoned before church because, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, I was just lost. And
Rastafari's got high when they read the Bible.
I mean, that wasn't what my angle, but, you know, like, I was around it all the time, but I didn't engage. I wasn't experiencing God.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that is like such a vast difference for me.
Yeah.
Hearing about him and stories and all this stuff sounds really good. But then actually experiencing him, which for me was really scary.
Yeah.
Like terrifying.
Yeah.
To just be like, all right, like, I give up.
Yeah.
I surrender. Like, if you want me to do that, that's what I'll do. And yeah. then he's like, man, I've been waiting for that. Boom. There you go.
Right.
Got you, player.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting that you, in looking back at the way you engaged with your, you know, faith community, right? You weren't engaged, which kept you in that kind of judgmental outside mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think like there's been times when some people have come to me and talking about their church experience and they want to change churches or whatever, and I usually ask like, well, how involved are you, you know?
Yeah.
And I think most people don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear, well, if you don't like if you're a part of a body of believers, right, which would be a church, right, a group of people that have all come together and said, this is how we're going to do things, right? We like to sing in this way, we like to read in this way, we like to hear it in this way, right? This is the beauty of religion, right? Like the word religion means to bind together, right? So it's binding together of humanity and divinity, but it's also binding together the community, right? Mm-hmm. So if you go to the little church down the street and they don't got drums and you're going to that church probably because you like church like that, right? So it binds you together. So if you're kind of experiencing a community and you're not really happy with the way it's happening, you know, maybe it's because you're being asked to change it or address it.
Maybe you're the problem.
Maybe you're the problem. Right. Your inaction is the problem.
You know what? Like, I think being around a bunch of people that, like, were happy, joyous, free, they, like, mm-hmm. just had poise and, you know, handled things really well. I thought, much like at church and AA meetings and all that kind of stuff, that just by being around these people, that through osmosis, I would get what they got without uh-huh. doing any work.
Right, right.
I genuinely believed that for right. a while. That just by going there,
yeah,
checking a box on a Sunday,
you get on your like pollen or something,
dude. I don't know why I rub in my shoulders. Mind, yeah, I thought that was gonna work.
Right,
and I had tried that before and it didn't.
Yeah,
I'd go to meetings late, leave early, not talk to anybody, get a sponsor, not call them.
Right.
You know, all that stuff. I was just really lazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of that's how we are. You know, and I think you have these extreme examples of the fruit of walking with and the fruit of not, right? And in the extreme example of addiction, right, versus being in addiction, being in recovery. So, you know, there's some evidence of the things that happen. But sometimes, you know, it's like this old, it's an older kind of theological way of thinking of things, right? It's like the blessing of your life is evidence. This is how they used to think back in the day. They used to think that if you were rich and had land, that you were blessed by God. And that if you were poor and didn't have things, it was because God had cursed you, essentially, right?
And your family, right?
And your family, right? So that's why you didn't have a lot, right? And so sometimes when we're like talking about evidence of God, right, it's hard to have that conversation without leaning towards that kind of old way of thinking about God in forms of like, I don't know, good and bad, or so simply, right? Like, because what you just described was the exact opposite of it. Your encounter with God was not, you did get blessed, but you got blessed by doing the thing that you didn't want to do.
Yeah.
That's the thing about these spiritual axioms, right? Or these paradoxes of spirituality. It's like, in you doing what you didn't want, you got what you didn't know you really needed.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like that, like spiritual economics, to keep what you have, you got to give it away.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
It's totally like contrary.
If it was a dollar bill, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I don't keep this by giving it away. I lose it by giving it away.
Right. Right. That's just bad math.
Yeah.
Jesus.
That's why you're broke.
That's just, yeah, Jesus was not a mathematician.
I was like earlier, let me borrow $5, man. Come on.
Right. Right.
I'll get you back.
Yeah. So let me tell, I guess for me, you know, I had a spiritual experience with God before I really got into recovery. And my spiritual experience was like in 98, I went to this big men's event. And, you know, I don't know if they were up there tearing phone books in half or what, you know.
Bench presses for Jesus.
Yeah, but at the time I was addicted to meth. I was just gnarly. And so I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, yeah. Right? That old adage. And I didn't really want to, I wasn't signing up for an after death insurance plan. I wasn't trying to be a part of a cult, you know. I just saw all these men in this giant LA Coliseum going down to the stage altar. And I just was like, oh, I need to go down there. So I went and did that. And when I went down there, there was this something happened to me, for me, right?
Yeah.
But it was that little act of obedience. I don't know what I'm walking into, but I know that the way I've been living is not working, right?
Yeah.
So I walked down there. And then I had this spiritual experience, and I lost my desire for drugs and alcohol, and I got really involved in this church, and the street ministry, you know, homeless people would pull their shopping cart up, they'd go sit in the back of the sanctuary. I rapped, and during Sunday service, we had break dancers. I mean, like, this church was wild, you know, the pastor would roll up on a Harley, you know, Set Free, Bakersfield.
Sweet.
So that was my first real like church experience. I had been to church before as a kid, but this was like my real, like, I was bought into the community, right? Yeah. But what I didn't do was I didn't think I was an addict. I just thought I was, you know,
struggling a lot.
I wasn't living right.
Yeah.
And but when we moved from Bakersfield to LA, I got out of that community, you know, and then I started drinking again. And then I started getting high again, and then, you know, it's years and years of that goes until when I went to rehab. And when I went to rehab in 2011, what I realized was it was that community was the key piece that I was missing, you know? Mm. And I had really good friends throughout those years, but that spiritual community I was lacking. And that being obedient to go to rehab and show up and then try to surrender over everything that I had been working so hard to accumulate and become, and look at me and what I've done, you know, was a real difficult thing to do. And I think on some level I did it because I wanted to get sobriety, right? I wanted that thing. So I was still kind of this is kind of weird to say, but I was still kind of playing the game. Right? I was playing the religious game.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'll give you my life because I know my life will be better. So when we talk about these kind of things, it's so complex because I feel like I'm still learning so much about what it means to surrender to God. And the more that I've tried to live a life like that, the more simple and simpler it gets, to where today my, when I talk about the fruit, right? The fruit is all the things that would be important to me on my deathbed are in order right now. Mm-hmm. All the things that wouldn't be important are not in order.
Yeah.
And that's hard for me to consistently value, because I want the more money. I want more
worldly security.
I want more.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, I have to continually remind myself, well, all the things that are really important, right? Like, my family is healthy, my kids, I have good relationships, I have good relationships with my parents. Like, the ones that are really important, my close friends, I have real good relationship with, right? And so it's like, those important things are good. And that's kind of the fruit for me of walking with God, is that the real important stuff is good, you know? Yeah. And, but again, like, getting to that, like, if one of those things stopped being good, would I still remain obedient?
Mm.
You know, I don't know. Hope, yeah. I'm not trying to test the Lord on that.
You know, and it's like, all right, so you talk about being obedient to what you feel like God's telling you to do. If I'm me 5 years ago, I'm like, okay, like, cool. How do I do that? Like, I don't hear from God.
Right.
And I would argue that for pretty much anybody.
Yeah.
Like, we've always been hearing from God. We just didn't recognize it as Him.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, you know, you're back in your addiction and you're about to do some sketchy shit. And before you do, you're like, man, I probably shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
And then you're like, ah, screw it. And you go do it. And then the thing you thought, the bad thing you thought might happen happens, and you're like, dang it, why didn't I listen to that voice?
Right.
I would argue that that's God or the Holy Spirit speaking to us
right.
through our conscience. We know yeah. right from wrong.
Yeah. Whatever God is, it's something working that way. It works in our...
something good
yeah.
in us that cares about us and could yeah. tell us, like, whoa, hold on, don't do that.
Right.
Like, you know better than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't touch that hot stove. Are you going to touch it? And you're burned.
Right.
And, you know, we do that until we learn the lesson.
Yeah.
If we survive.
Right.
You know?
And I do think you become seasoned, I think, when you start this kind of like the fruit of walking with God, when you start walking with God, right? And, you know, in the beginning, I think a lot of things happen that are building your faith. All these good things.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you do get, like, in your case, right? You get the community. You get the people rallying around you, people offering to buy you food, give you rides, and you're thinking, what do you really want,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
what's your angle?
Right. So you get these kind of things that are, and what they're doing, what I believe is happening is your faith is getting built, you know? And then, as that kind of goes on, then my experience is that then you enter into kind of these like desert periods of
the plateaus, yeah.
These deserts where you're not hearing, it's not so plain, the evidence,
yeah.
The fruit, it's not so clear. And so those are the places where it's really hard to stay walking. Right, it's yeah. hard to keep on the path.
Yeah,
because you're like, I'm not sure if this is
like, man, I've been getting paychecks, dude. What happened? I'm not getting no money in my account.
Right.
What's going on?
Right,
been yeah. getting these spiritual paychecks, and now they stop. What yeah. did I get fired? What's going on?
Right, like I equate it to walking in the fog, you know, and I think that's a little bit where I'm at today. Is I'm walking in the fog, in my faith. I can't see where I'm going.
Yeah.
Right, and. I grew up in Bakersfield, California, and so in Bakersfield during the winter months, in the mornings, the fog is like thick. Like you can't see 10, 6 feet in front of you, right? So you got to slow down if you're driving.
Mm.
But you know that if you keep going, you'll eventually get to where you need to go, right? But you yeah. only can see this little bit. And that's where I think... no matter where you are, like it shifts and changes. And that's been my experience.
Yeah.
Like I've had those points where it's like I can see it and I'm reaching for it and I'm striving. But then now I'm in this place where it's like I can't really see it, but I know I can't. I could turn around Sure. Or just sit down.
That's always an option.
Or pitch a tent and just kick it and go, I'm gonna wait for the fog to clear. You know, but I'm keeping moving, and you know, it's hard because it's like the fruit is not so apparent. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not so
I would say clear. I'm probably in a similar season.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's and that's difficult. But I think and that's where it's so important to work with others, right? When you work with that person who's got 3 days of recovery, and it reminds me, like I have a sponsor who didn't call me today. And I was like, I wasn't so much worried about him, but I was more like, dang, I missed that call. Because that call was reminding me like how good I have it right now.
Yeah.
Right? How much I'm not really struggling and stressing and tripping, you know? Why, you know, just gave away how selfish I am. I didn't really care if I hope he's okay. But but it was more like so when this is what's great about the steps, right? The encouraging of working with others helps. This is why I think we're that giving it away. Because it puts your life in perspective.
Yes, dude. And so that's like so when I was thinking about this topic earlier today, it's like, okay, when I'm walking with God, I'm experiencing these fruits of the Spirit that we talk about. Yeah. Love, patience, kindness, gentleness, self-control.
Long-suffering.
Huh?
Yeah, that's in there.
Oof. Okay, I forgot about that one. That one doesn't sound like it goes with the other ones, but I'll trust you. So I'm experiencing those things, those that kind of poise that I witnessed on these guys that led me down this path initially. Oh, yeah. Right? I'm experiencing that. My perspective isn't so narrow, like the here and now. I can see things more of like big picture, and something with the narrow perspective might feel like a big deal, but with like a wider perspective, it's like, it's probably fine.
Yeah.
You know, like you were talking about like financial stuff versus like the health of your family. These things that are going to be important on your deathbed are in order. And then when I'm not walking with God, I'm very selfish and self-centered and lazy and narrow-minded and quick to anger. And when I'm doing really well, and this can happen sometimes, you know, months, or sometimes this could happen in one day or 1 hour.
Yeah.
I go from being connected and like in just a really good space, and I can just very subtly drift to this other ditch of I'm super selfish, self-centered. It's all about me.
Yeah.
Maybe not my actions, but I'll be thinking it. Yeah. And so I'm wondering, like, okay, that happens very gradually to the point where all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, how did I get in this super selfish ditch? Like,
right.
That just came out of me. Like, this, I need to adjust something. And something that helps me rapidly get to the good ditch of being connected with God is gratitude.
Yeah.
You know?
So there's a good ditch. It's like bubbles full of like balls, like little one of those like balls at the Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. That's in the good ditch. It's like a bubble bath.
And it's just like what broken needles and like broken bottles in the other one. Ditch.
Yeah, you're like, where's the bubble bath?
This hurts. This one hurts. Not so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, gratitude is the thing that like transports me out of that.
Mm.
First is recognizing that I'm not where I want to be.
Yeah, the check engine light.
Or
those things, those emotions, those things that pull up. It's like telling you, oh, it's not so much like, it's like a check engine. It's not to beat yourself up or be shameful about. It's about, okay, these things are based on what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah.
This is fruit of me not surrendering. There's something I'm holding on to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And gratitude lets you let back go.
It's like, man, I don't have to, I don't know. Yeah. Gratitude is this thing where I just, you said something about this is, the altar call thing, like it's not happening to me, it's happening for me.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, like in this season of fog and I can't see what's in front of me and I'm not experiencing all this fruit as much, you know, as frequently or as intense as I was, I can look back at the very first time I gave God some trust and what kind of fed that was the worst day of my life or what I would have described it as.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I look back, it's like the best day of my life because it put me on this this life-changing course.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, if God can use that for my benefit, first off, this shitty day now kind of pales in comparison to wanting to kill myself.
Right.
You know, like, it's probably fine, dude. You know, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I'll experience gratitude for the contrast in the two and be like, you know what? If he used that, maybe today isn't happening to me. Maybe it's happening for me.
Right.
And I just need to look for that.
Yeah.
Because whatever I look for, I'm going to find.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so there's some responsibility I have to, like, check my perspective and my attitude.
Yeah.
Like, guys will tell me, like, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm just trusting God. God's going to work it all out. It's like, look, dude, like.
Yes.
Good. I mean,
but no.
I mean, good luck with that.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, trust like it depends on God, but man, work like it depends on you. Take action.
There's a trust in the Lord, but still tie up your camel.
I haven't heard that one.
It's a Islamic saying.
In the Middle East.
Yeah. Trust in the Lord, but still tie up your camel.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and then we're going to wrap this up. We've been in the cosmos. I hope it's been helpful. And, you know, yeah, here we go. Montana Society, an inspiring docuseries about a group of addicts who endeavor to repurpose an underground nuclear bunker in Paradise Valley, Montana. Along the way, they learn to work together under the wild leadership of Dean, a financial guru and outdoorsman who has his money on the line. In the end, will they learn to repurpose their pain and the bunker into something new and wonderful? Find out on this season of the Montana Society. And we're back. All right, so we kind of went into the cosmos a little bit.
A little bit.
It was good, though.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So let's... I enjoyed it, too. Yeah. I didn't know if you were expecting.
Sweet.
You talked about gratitude. I think gratitude is a grace. I do think that there are things we can do to help us manifest gratitude. Gratitude list. Right, things like that. But I think it's a grace. You know, when it really sinks from up here to here, and you're really grateful. It's a grace of God to be able to see the goodness of what it is.
Yeah,
yeah. And I always like to point to, you know, when Jesus talks about, you know, look to the birds of the air. Right,
they want for nothing.
They don't sow or reap. They don't stow away in barns. But the Lord takes care of them. You know, look at the flowers of the field, right? And what's interesting to me is Jesus is saying, look at nature. Look at the thing that's happening around you without you doing it. Because we all die today. These trees are going to keep, they're going to bloom.
Yeah.
Come spring, right? Whatever it is that's happening in nature, it's happening. And we can build, it's just like, you know, when you see like a old abandoned building that has not been taken care of and like the grass and the moss and the vines start growing over it.
Reclaiming it.
It's reclaiming it. Like nature is doing something. And this is what I love about Jesus' teachings, because Jesus is teaching us something that's like, look at nature. And so for me, when I look at nature, it connects me to that kingdom mindset, which connects me to gratitude, right? Because I can look at the tree, and I look at the pine tree outside my window, and I'm like, that pine tree's looks like he's pretty content being a pine tree.
Yeah.
He's not sitting over there wishing he was in L.A. as a palm tree.
Yeah.
You know? That pine tree's pretty cool. He's not wishing if I was a bush. I wish I would have been a bush. He's cool being
and
a pine tree.
And maybe on fire and shit. You know.
You know. Then I'd be happy.
I heard about a bush like that one time.
Right. The nature is doing its thing and it's not worried about it.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a really grounding thought for me. you know?
Yeah.
That it's doing its thing. And I can be a part of that if I just do my thing. So when it comes to the nuts and bolts of living like this, it's about praying, offering myself to God, and then I do what's before me. And I get enough information for the day. And I do what's before me today. And all those stupid sayings you hear, next right thing,
yeah,
you know, one day at a time, one moment at a time.
So true.
It's so true.
Golly.
And because when I just do that, it seems to work out.
Yeah.
You know? And it works out in a way that I probably would jack up if I tried to control everything. Because I'm by nature an anxious, controlling person. So I see things through all the angles, and I think about every, and I want to control it all. So I have to be in that position of surrender. And I was having a conversation with a mutual friend of ours this morning, and it's about with God, I have to keep my hands, both hands out, open. And the good thing is that anything God wants to put in my hands, he can. But the bad thing is anything he wants to take out, he can.
Mm.
And the moment I begin to clutch onto something, I cannot receive what he might want to put there.
Mm.
Because I don't want to let go.
Yeah.
So letting go. And thankfully, I don't have to let go of everything all at once. I just have to let go every day for what's right in front of me.
Yeah.
And go, I let go. All right. And I write a list down.
Am I going to have to do this forever? You know?
Yeah. I'm self-employed, independent, urban missionary lifestyle. Most of what I do is from donations from people who love and support me and what we're doing. And so I have to write a list down of all the things I got to do. And in the morning, I look at that list. And I cross off what's done, and then I start on the next thing or whatever I kind of feel like I need to do or want to do, really, you know?
Yeah.
And then the things I don't really want to do make it to the next list. But that's how I do it. That's how I live in this life. And it's really difficult some days. And some days I have to call people and talk about my life and talk about what I'm going through. Some days I got to just regulate myself. And some days I just got to answer the call when it comes.
Yeah.
And that's me impractical, how I get to this walking with God. So if you were to explain your daily, how you're practically doing this, what's it like for you?
Man, I would say my roommate, he has a poster in his room, and it kind of sums it up
pretty simply. Is it the cat holding on to the tree?
I forget what the actual picture. No, it's I forget what the actual picture is, but the sentiment is don't be a dick.
Ah. That's good.
I mean, it's so simple.
Yeah.
But it's kind of profound, man, cuz like when I'm not walking with God, I'm a dick, dude. Yeah. I'm selfish. I am the biggest thing in the room. I'm the most important thing. Yeah. I'm the smartest person. You know what I mean? Like I am what matters. And when I'm when I'm with him and I'm experiencing somebody else, man, time just slows down.
Mm.
And that moment feels like, I don't know, more pronounced or
does
that resonate with you?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Like, you ever have those things and like the background just kind of fades out and you're like 100% present in that moment?
Yeah.
I experienced that this last weekend. Was in Myrtle Beach with my girlfriend and her daughter. I'm from Jacksonville and like love surfing, and I miss going to the beach and I miss surfing at sunrise. That was my favorite time on the East Coast.
Oh,
sunrise, the best. And we were on the 19th floor, and I could stand on the balcony where I don't see any of the hotel. I don't see any of the other buildings. All I see is water and the horizon and the sun coming up. That is all I can see in my view.
Wow.
And I felt so small.
Mm.
And I just see this nice, like, beautiful, warm sun. And I'm like, man, God is good, dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, looking at nature, right?
But, I mean, on a day-to-day basis, I think I've, you know, that voice I talked about earlier where God's like, the Holy Spirit is saying like, oh, you shouldn't do this. And you do it anyways and something bad happens. And you're like, dang it, why didn't I listen to that voice? I think on a good day, I have that voice turned all the way up. And it's not just on these big, you know, don't run across traffic kind of things.
Right.
You know, it'll be subtle interactions. I walk past at work or something, there's a piece of trash on the ground. It's like, pick it up.
Mm.
It's like, dang, I don't really want to. All right, pick it up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or man, ask that dude how he's doing.
Yeah.
Or somebody saying something, man, don't say that. Don't say something. Just listen.
Yeah.
And
that's great.
It's just getting good at, I think, listening to that and being obedient.
Yeah. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us.
Yeah.
There's an intuition about your life now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think like the biggest one for interactions with other people is I'm so much more equipped now to see, like, if you were to like pop off at me and like get mad and say some mean shit, I would just see like the pain behind it. And it makes it really easy for me to not reciprocate and like match your level of anger and to be like, man, he's hurting.
Yeah.
It's not about me. You know, I kind of remove when I'm on a good day.
Yeah, because I'm thinking now that you've said that, you're probably going to have someone pop off on you.
Maybe, you know?
And test your theory. It happens to me every time I do something like
that.
Yeah. This is why I don't ever preach out of the book of Job or the book of Revelations.
Careful
what
you ask for. Yeah. But no, yeah, I'm able to have that compassion for somebody.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I'm more of like a background of what's going on, not the foreground.
Yeah. No, but I would say that's my experience of you. Yeah. I've seen you do that, and I've seen you do that with me. Like, you have, and this is to the intuition, you have ability to kind of see past the external mask or ego or projection of somebody and see past that. And so that gives you the ability to not be offended. Richard Rohr says that the spirit is never offended.
Yeah.
And anytime you're offended, it's you who's offended.
Yeah, right? Dude, totally.
So anytime you feel offended, it's you. The spirit is not tripping.
It's raising suns
and turning moons and doing all kinds of shit. It ain't worried about your feelings, you know?
Then it's like, that double sucks when you come to that realization.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, now not only are you pissed, but you're also responsible for that. And you got some work to do.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man, that sucks.
Yeah, the double hit. All right, so our last thing is we final thoughts, right? It's a little Jerry Springer moment.
Mm.
So if you were to look at the camera and talk to the person who's on the other end of this, and if they've gotten this far or maybe not, we clip it and we put it out there, right? But the person who is struggling with this thing, right, and this God thing and living this new way of life, whether they're sober, they're not sober, whatever they are, but they're struggling with it. What would you say to that person on the other end?
I would say that in my experience, my personal experience, and then observations of others, the people that don't do well with recovery or spirituality, they'll go to a meeting or a rehab or a church or fill in the blank, and they'll treat it like an experience. They'll be like, oh, that was cool. I heard some dope shit. And then they don't practice any of it. And then the people that I've seen do really well in all of those same arenas embrace it as a lifestyle.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I would encourage you to, when I ask you, what does that lifestyle look like for you? Something is going to pop up in you, and it's probably going to be the thing you don't want to do. I would encourage you to do it and see what happens.
Yeah. Unless that thing is buy cocaine, then don't do that.
Yeah.
Man, dude.
Wrong lifestyle. U-turn.
Adam, I love you, brother. I appreciate you being
love
here.
Love you too, man.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Jeff, for running the ones and twos.
Yeah.
This has been the Most High Show.